Despite all the warnings about how the lottery should not be seen as an investment program, several of us, yeah, me too, will go out today and buy tickets we hope will bring us a few bucks. Hope springs eternal or something. Plenty of people put a lot more effort and time into gambling, often with less than nothing to show for it. Especially in casino gambling, the house always wins. Or does it? Our first guest wrote a book about science and its intrusion into gambling. The book is called The Perfect Bet: How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. The book is the work of Adam Kucharski, who holds a PhD in mathematics from Cambridge University. He's a lecturer in mathematical modeling at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Dr. Kucharski, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. So let us talk about the general approach here. I mean, you're saying that science has made enough inroads on gambling now that there are ways that the house can be beaten?
It has, yes. And actually, throughout history, I think people have used science to try and chip away at the casino's edge. And really, you know, even if you think the birth of ideas like probability and statistics came with people trying to study these games and look for ways that they could be beaten. That's continued much to the present day. I mean, in many areas, there's been an emergence of everything from statisticians tackling sports prediction, essentially the equivalent of hedge funds who are systematically trying to predict sports results. And then in other games like poker, you know, these computer scientists who've come up with software which can, you know, in many cases, beat many of the top human players.
Now, I understand that some of the experiments have been extensive. I mean, there are stories in the book of people who flipped coins over and over and over and over. Did they get the results they were looking for?
It's remarkable the lengths that some people go to. That particular story was a statistician. This was around 1900, who was very much of the belief that you had to observe the world. You had to collect as much data as you could get your hands on. He actually flipped a coin 25,000 times during his summer holiday. So I don't know how you spend your summer breaks, but you know, that was what he got up to. And actually, one of the things that he was really interested in was he saw casinos as essentially a giant laboratory to collect data on random events. And Monte Carlo, he spent quite a lot of effort analyzing their results. But actually, one of the unfortunate things he found, he looked at the roulette spins that were reported in the local newspaper. So in Monte Carlo, you could actually see what results came out. And he studied them statistically and found that there was a bias in the tables. And he thought this was an amazing finding and, you know, really kind of showed how important statistics could be. But it turned out that actually the journalists who were meaning to record the results of the newspaper had instead decided it was easier just to hole up in the bar and instead make up the numbers. So I think that was a good example of, you know, sometimes the data doesn't always look as you expect it to.
Rather than hang around the table and report on the results, they just went someplace else and made them up?
Exactly, yeah. And so that's why his test came out that these casinos were filling the tables, but actually it was just the journalists doing, you know, a bit of a lazy work.
Yikes. I hope that doesn't reflect on all journalists. The idea of roulette, though, being predictable in any way, though, it seems like of anything that goes on in a casino, that might be the least easy to predict.
Indeed, and actually there's two ways you can beat roulette, amazingly. One of the first ways is to look for biased tables. Of course, over time, tables might wear down or, you know, some of the surfaces might become uneven. And in the past, some people have been very successful in looking at a lot of these spins and spotting if a table's slightly slanted or slightly uneven, certain numbers or regions might come up more often. If you can identify that, you can obviously bet more often on that. A lot of casinos, of course, have worked this out, so they try and keep their tables very pristine and, you know, sort of perfectly level. But in that case, it's essentially, you know, it's not a matter of collecting data, it's more of a physics problem. Because if you think of a roulette ball orbiting a table, essentially that's like a planet orbiting a sun or something like that. So in that respect, physics can come into play. And in many instances, physicists have actually developed equations, whereas if you can collect information on how the ball spins around the table, then before the croupier calls no more bets, if you can get enough information about the trajectory of the ball, then you can work out where it might land. And actually, in some cases, people have got about a 20% edge over the casino, which for, you know, a casino is a remarkable advantage to have as a gambler.
I can imagine, though, casinos were not particularly pleased to have scientists in there over the years and, in fact, probably actively repelled them.
They did, yes. So actually, in the 1980s, the law was changed to ban computers in casinos. So you're not actually allowed calculating devices nowadays, because people, you know, in one instance, hid a shoe hit a computer in a shoe, rather, to try and collect this data and carry out these physics calculations. So often these edges, you know, when people find them, they do get chipped away, and people have to look at new ways of taking on casinos and bookmakers.
Adam Kucharski, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a mathematician from the University of, from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about his book, The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. 800-838-3760 with your phone calls and your emails. Go to jx@jeffnet.org. How did you in particular end up going down this alley, Adam?
I've always had an interest in risk and chance. I think anyone with a mathematical background, you know, you want to understand games and understand how things can be beaten. And I obviously don't work in gambling. I work in public health. I mean, my job involves trying to understand infectious disease outbreaks. So that's obviously a situation where risk and chance events are incredibly important. And one of the things I found really interesting researching the book is how much of science was inspired by people looking at games and gambling. I mean, for many scientists, you know, everyone from Galileo to Alan Turing, they very much used these games as almost a playground for ideas. They've used it as a way just to explore how chance events work. And like I mentioned with the roulette table, try and find whether there's gaps in our knowledge and things that you can exploit to find a better way of doing something.
So, you know, as we mentioned, people have been studying casinos for a very long time, and the idea of beating the house is not particularly new either. Tell us a bit about Edward Thorpe and what he wrote.
So Thorpe was really a game changer in terms of what he did for casinos and people's approaches to gambling. And initially, he'd worked on some of these roulette prediction methods as a college student. But one of the things he really changed was how we think about blackjack. So blackjack, of course, this game where the aim is to draw cards until you hit as near to 21 as possible. And if you go over, then you go bust and the dealer wins. And a few people had previously noticed that if you take account of what card the dealer has, so in blackjack, the dealer has one card face up and one face down. And if you account for that when you're betting and you're just making your choices, you can actually reduce the chance of the casino winning, but the casino still has an advantage. But what Thorpe noticed is that the card draws aren't independent, because obviously as you go through a deck of cards, if you know what's come previously, you can have some advantage because you've got some sense of there's only certain cards left that can be drawn. And he developed this whole science of card counting, which actually gave him a fairly considerable edge over a casino. In the end, he had to resort to disguises, because obviously when the casino notices what's going on, they really clamp down quite heavily. But subsequently, this idea of using card counting to beat the house of blackjack has been used by a number of groups. I mean, famously, the MIT students in the 1980s and 90s who employed a lot of teamwork. You know, they got around this problem of casinos spotting one gambler by having lots of teams. You know, so they had kind of girls who were playing kind of the ditzy blonde, and then you had other people who were playing, you know, the kind of the big shot, and then the naive guy, and working together to actually implement these quite complex mathematical systems.
Wow. So but obviously casinos really don't like the idea of people, and it sounds like they will ask people to leave if they do think they are counting cards.
Exactly. And some of the people I talked to for the book actually said, you know, the casinos, once the word gets out, it's almost like you can't really gamble anywhere, because they'll share information. And in some cases, very successful blackjack players moved to other industries. So there were some who in the 1980s turned their attention to things like horse racing, because I think they decided that really blackjack, you know, the winnings are relatively small and the casinos can really clamp down on you, whereas, you know, other games are potentially a little bit easier to beat, and, you know, you won't get kicked out for winning.
When we talk about all the many different forms of gambling, I mean, we're talking to roulette, to horse racing, to lottery. Is there any set of principles common to all, given that they generate their winning number or winning combination of very different ways?
I think there are some principles that are common to all of them. I think the most central one is understanding what the odds are and what your advantage is as it stands, and ways that you can improve that. So as an example, I mean, you saw in the U.S. with the big Powerball rollover a few weeks ago that was a situation where the potential winnings were much, much higher than usual compared to the price of a ticket. The tickets cost the same, but the winnings are much higher. And people have used that in the past in lotteries to find some loopholes. So I think that's the first thing, is really understanding how the games work and understanding if there are loopholes in that. I think also just the strategy of carrying out betting. A lot of these different games, everything from blackjack to horse racing to sports betting, I mean, even financial investments, I mean, fields that aren't gambling, it's incredibly important to manage your money well. You know, if you think you've got a good investment, you don't necessarily put all your money into it. You need to diversify and actually balance how much risk and potential benefit you have. And that's a really fundamental problem in gambling as well. If you think about a poker game, you know, you might have a good hand, but do you want to risk all your money on thinking that you're going to win?
Adam Kucharski, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, mathematician from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and the author of the book called The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments about what he's discovered in the book, or for that matter, about your own experiences with gambling and systems that may or may not have worked for you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's be clear, though. I mean, you're not trying to make it easier for people to get into gambling here, are you, Adam?
Not at all. And I think one of the things I found very interesting researching the book is that a lot of the people who came up with these systems and these kind of quite effective ways of beating games aren't actually professional gamblers. They didn't go into gambling. And as I mentioned, I think for a lot of scientists, betting is almost just a way of testing out ideas. That for them, it's not an end game. It's not that they want to become a gambler. It's just that these games of chance are incredibly important and useful for understanding risk in a very, I guess, well-defined way. You know, a game of poker, there's only certain options you can have and certain ways you can make decisions. So it's a very nice way of testing out these ideas. In many cases, these people have gone into tech or research or finance or a whole range of industries. But I think really what the book illustrates is that these ideas throughout history have been very important, and these ways of trying to find loopholes and using your curiosity, I guess, to find how games can be beaten can result in some quite powerful insights into risk and chance and just luck in many other aspects of life.
So a lot of other fields of science have been enhanced, do you think, from the study of gambling?
Definitely. I mean, as I mentioned, I think probability and statistics are two obvious examples which really emerged from people studying betting. I mean, a lot of the probability ideas, I mean, now if we roll a dice, we have some sense of the chances of getting a six, or if we roll it twice, getting two sixes. But back in the Renaissance, you know, back in the 1500s, people didn't have any sense of what a fair bet was, and people developed all of this theory of probability to tackle that kind of idea. And actually, other areas of science have benefited as well. So game theory, which is this whole area of economics that looks at how we make games and decisions relative to what other people are doing. So, you know, if I'm making a decision and you're making a decision, I've got to anticipate that what you might do relative to what you think I'm going to do and these kind of choices. And that whole field really originated with people studying poker. And now that's come into a lot of other areas of how we think and how we strategize, but really originated with people studying those kind of games. So I think historically, gambling has maybe unexpectedly contributed a lot to science, but even today it's continuing to do so. There's examples of research which are pushing forward our understanding of luck and decision-making, and they're doing that by studying betting.
Well, when I hear discussions of game theory, I always wonder if this is more mathematics or psychology or some odd melding of the two, perhaps.
It is, yes. I think one of the main aims of game theory is just to put, I guess, a set of rules and a set of fairly solid understanding on something that can be quite ambiguous. So to use the psychology example, for a long time people thought that bluffing was a very human psychological thing to do. You know, if in poker you've got a bad hand and you bet heavily to scare somebody off, that's quite a devious human thing. You know, that's not you're not using maths there. You're just trying to kind of bluff somebody. But actually, one of the first mathematical proofs that was done, so one of the first bits of game theory that was developed, found that actually it's the mathematically optimal thing to do. So, you know, if you work out all the payoffs and all the possibilities that could happen mathematically, it tells you that you should bluff. So actually, these things that we might think are inherently psychological and very devious are actually just something that comes straight out of the mathematics when you develop the theory.
Huh. So they just work the odds a little more in your favor, or they're expected?
Exactly. So it's the idea that if you're in a situation where you have quite bad cards, you know, if you bet a very small amount, that probably won't scare someone off, and then, you know, they'll call your bet essentially, and then you'll have lost that small bet you made. Whereas if you bet large, and they've got an okay hand, that might be enough to tip them into folding. And actually, there's other examples as well that have come up. So these teams that have these very good computer programs, essentially the programs learn themselves. You know, these computer programs play billions of games and just teach themselves strategies and tactics. And what's remarkable is they've started doing things that look very human. So, you know, these programs have had no input. You know, nobody's told them how to play. But they've learned that things like manipulating their opponents and kind of deceiving how you place your bets is actually the optimal thing to do. So I think it's really interesting that things that we sometimes have a reputation for being very psychological and very kind of innate to how we behave, actually, when you look at the mathematics of it, are very much kind of the optimal thing to do if you want to maximize your chances of winning.
Well, the book deals not just with the macro stuff, like what the person does, but also some of the micro elements of the game. And I was surprised to find that you're saying that a shuffled deck of cards is not necessarily random. What's going on in there?
Yeah, so this was one of the interesting things that came out of casinos trying to counter people card counting at blackjack. And what they did is, rather than use one deck of cards, they used like five or six decks. But when they shuffled them, they used what's known as a dovetail shuffle or riffle shuffle. So you know when someone splits the pack in two and then riffles it between the two halves in their hands. And actually, if you think what's happening here, you're dividing the cards into two piles and then shuffling them back together, alternating order. So actually, you're not shuffling them completely. You're essentially just, at most, shuffling each card one along. And a lot of the mathematicians looking at this realize that if a casino is just shuffling a pack of cards once and they've kept track of what order the cards were originally, there's actually a huge amount of information still remaining, and actually enough to make quite profitable bets because the casino isn't shuffling the cards enough to be random. And mathematicians have subsequently worked out that you need to riffle shuffle a deck of cards about six times to be as good as random. And casinos, I think in many cases, were shuffling it once or twice. So they thought they were shuffling it and making it random, but actually there's a huge amount of information still held in that deck. And if you'd recorded it, then that was obviously a big advantage for your betting.
We're talking to Adam Kucharski on the Jefferson Exchange, a mathematician and the author of The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. So it sounds almost like it's a little bit of an arms race here, that people develop systems to figure out what casinos are up to, then casinos have to change their techniques and that sort of thing.
There is. In many games, there is this kind of ongoing arms race. But what's interesting, I think, is it's not just casinos trying to get one up on the smart bettors. Because if you think of all the people that might play games or place bets, it's not just the kind of the guys using maths to do this. And in many cases, casinos or lotteries will introduce new games to try and attract new customers, but won't necessarily realize that there's a big loophole there waiting to be exploited. A good example is a few years ago in Massachusetts, they had this lottery, and they had this problem where it rolled over too many times, so like the Powerball recently. If it rolls over a lot and no one wins, then people kind of get a bit frustrated. You know, if no one's won the jackpot for weeks and months, then in one case in Massachusetts, it went for a year without being won. And that really kind of has an impact because you want winners and that kind of generates excitement. So they introduced a new feature that meant if the lottery reached a certain point, then essentially everyone would be a winner. They'd roll down the prizes to everyone else. And some students at MIT noticed that this tips things really kind of in your favor if you're buying a lottery ticket or if you're buying lots of lottery tickets. And they engineered a system to actually take advantage of this this roll-down effect that was happening every few weeks because, you know, the casino had put that into place to avoid, you know, a year with no winners. But actually, in doing so, they had left something that mathematically could be exploited.
So did they announce when they were going to roll things down? I mean, because then anybody could have bought tickets for that particular period.
So this was where things got a bit interesting, because they generally tried to predict when it would roll down. So they said it would roll down at $2 million. So whenever it got to about $1.8 million, there was a lot of excitement because next week might be this roll down. But on one occasion, these MIT students noticed that if they bought enough tickets, they could force it to roll down. So I think on one occasion, it got to about 1.6 million. And yeah, and these guys bought hundreds of thousands of tickets, which was enough to push it over the limit before everyone else had kind of worked out what was happening. So in some cases, it's actually possible to, even though there's a sort of fixed set of rules for the game, to actually nudge things, you know, quite heavily in your favor.
Adam, I'm going to guess as a mathematician, there's a certain level of glee you take in people figuring out systems. I wonder what your sense is, though, of systems that beat casinos at their own game, for example. Is this sort of like justice, or do you take any particular moral tone with it?
It's interesting, again, talking to a lot of the people who've come up with these systems, a lot of them, you know, there's no love lost between them and casinos. And I think for a lot of people, the interest is very much in the game. I think for me as well, you know, I'm not, you know, a particular avid fan of casinos. I know there's some aspects of the gambling industry which are very problematic. But I think as a set of ideas, your gambling is a fascinating way of understanding chance. I think sometimes we need to almost separate gambling as an industry from gambling as a set of games and theories, which actually have been very important to science. I think that's really in the book where my interest lies, is picking apart those ideas and the people who've challenged ways of doing things, you know, rather than encouraging or discouraging based on certain aspects of the industry.
Do you think that the fact that there have been systems discovered for just about everything in gambling, that more people have been encouraged to take part of them?
It depends. I think there's always been an interest in systems, and certainly casinos generally like people with systems, especially if they haven't thought them out. I mean, there's often myths of magic formulas and magic systems, and I cover some of them in the book, that these rules which almost seduce a population. So, you know, when roulette first emerged in Paris, there was this doubling bet system which was incredibly popular but would always lead to bankruptcy. So I think there's always these stories that go through. But I think in many ways, when people do beat the system, and some of the stories I cover in the book, when you realize the amount of effort that goes into it, you can see probably why some of these people didn't become professional gamblers. You know, in some cases, if you're having to buy, you know, 200,000 lottery tickets by hand per week, you know, that's really kind of going to distract you.
It would indeed. We have more questions for you. We'll come back and talk a little more with Adam Kucharski about the perfect bet in just a few minutes here on the Jefferson Exchange. Please stay tuned. Back in a minute five. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're continuing our discussion with Adam Kucharski about the intersection of gambling and science. He's a mathematician at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, spends a lot of his time dealing with infectious diseases, but he turned his attention to gambling to write a book called The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take a few more minutes with Adam. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We've focused largely on things that go on in casinos, and I wonder, you mentioned the fact that the scientists have had some issues with casinos. Did you spend much time in casinos yourself for the creation of this book, Adam?
I've visited a few casinos. I think, you know, arguably, it's not so much fun if you're gambling. You know, I think there's if you go somewhere like Vegas, it's very easy to lose money, and certainly a lot of these places are designed to cost you that. So, you know, I like a game of poker with my friends, but I think games where the odds are very much against me are less tempting.
That would be interesting. I'd love to sit in on a poker game with a bunch of mathematicians. That must be a really interesting evening.
Yeah, I think a few people have stopped playing me at some of these games since I wrote the book, unfortunately.
Right. Let's talk about the games that are not right in front of you, though, where you're placing bets on things that are outside the domain of the whatever the betting parlor might be. Horse racing in particular, then I guess I can throw in here things like fantasy sports, because there's been such a growth of that, particularly in the United States. And are there systems that seem to make sense for those kinds of bets?
Yes, yeah, so these are quite interesting, you know, as you mentioned, horse racing and fantasy sports, because these are very much about identifying some measure of talent or quality. You know, whether you're predicting a sports game or a horse race, you want to be able to take the information that's available and almost distill it down into something that can tell you what the winner's going to be. And talking to people who've been very successful at horse racing, one of the things I found quite interesting is actually they have very little interest in why a horse will win. So, you know, often when a particular horse wins, there's a lot of stories about it was experienced, it had this jockey, it had this weight, all these kind of things. And really, they're just interested in crunching the numbers. You know, if they've got good predictions mathematically, they don't mind too much in understanding why the horses race in the way they do and how these kind of things work. So in many cases, they're kind of flying against a lot of folklore and superstition about how horse racing functions. And they're kind of ignoring that and saying, look, let's just focus on crunching the numbers and getting a set of predictions that works. I think fantasy sports, as well, as you mentioned, is a really interesting one, because that, again, is a situation where in many cases you're essentially placing money on your predictions being correct about you know, how particular players and teams will do. But obviously in the US this isn't classed as gambling, whereas if you place a bet on a sports match, it is. So I think in many instances this debate about what constitutes gambling and what constitutes skill-based investment is really growing. And obviously as the industry takes off, I think that's going to gain more and more attention.
Do you have any particular concerns about the spread of gambling into newer realms that might make it more palatable to people, like the fantasy sports in particular? The daily fantasy sports seem to be quite a focus in the United States at the moment.
I think it is a debate that needs to be had. And in many cases, there are games that are explicitly defined in law as gambling. So things like roulette and this sort of thing. But you know, poker, for instance, isn't. So under federal law, that's not actually defined as gambling. There's been some court cases in recent years trying to work out if it's a game of skill or a game of luck, because gambling is defined as something that is predominantly a game of luck. So, you know, if you look at something like fantasy sports, would you argue that's a game of skill or a game of luck based on how you gather this information together to make predictions? And, you know, if one of these things is luck but another thing is defined as skill, I think it's very hard to make that distinction. And as you said, there's potential for things to creep in which in many ways would be comparable to gambling, but can be kind of accepted, whereas very similar games aren't. And I think to some extent there needs to be some consistency in how we view these different games, rather than trying to draw like a hard line between this is gambling, this isn't, when actually there's some real similarities between the two.
As we pull our focus way back, we start to realize, oh yeah, it's not just that we place bets on the lottery or things like that, but we also we make a lot of bets in our daily lives and making decisions, don't we?
Exactly, and I think one of the reasons that understanding betting and risk taking is so important is because every day, you know, we do it in our relationships and in our careers. If you think, we're essentially trying to make decisions on hidden information and things we can't see and things we can't know for definite. We're trying to anticipate the outcomes, and that's essentially what poker is in a very simplified way. So a lot of these games and settings are just simplifications of situations that we encounter very often. You know, we've got to balance risk against reward. We've got to weigh up different choices and understand that maybe there's not a certain outcome. There's going to be some randomness involved, but try and make decisions regardless. So I think these kind of situations crop up a lot in life, and betting is actually a really good way of understanding the ideas behind a lot of these processes.
Yeah, we learn a lot about ourselves in addition to learning a lot about gambling in the book. It's called The Perfect Bet: How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. Adam Kucharski, mathematician from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, wrote it and joined us today. Adam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, take care.